Today we're going to discuss handicapped people, most specifically the hearing handicapped people. This is today sort of starts out Hearing Handicapped Week here at Holden, which is a very important enterprise. And Carol Storch, I think you were one of the ones that helped start this whole thing. We've been friends for a long time. She's been very dear friends to our daughters. And so this is Carol Storch, and she's going to say a few words about this and introduce her friends that are going to be here.
Okay, I'd like to first introduce Fred and Karen Gares. And Fred is a pastor of a hearing impaired congregation. Deaf, he signed to me. A deaf congregation in Vancouver, BC. And he's going to be serving as pastor for this week. And his wife Karen's going to help us out in various ways. We're going to have 8 or 9 hearing impaired people coming in. A couple are coming in today, and several then again on Monday. And we just hope to present some things to you, maybe answer some questions, give you some exposure to what is deafness and what it means, and of course things would be interpreted for their, so they can enjoy Holden as you enjoy Holden. And in the during the week, next week, we'll have some sessions also and different things to get the community involved in this particular week.
Thank you, Carol. Now, the real stars of today's show she hears some things. My wife, Signa, who I call the chief, and her dog, Bridget, who I call Dingbat. But you better not call her Dingbat. I'm the only one that can get by with that. I just call them the way I see them. But it is a bit disturbing, and I think the chief is sometimes embarrassed when we go out for walks. She's afraid the neighbors will hear me calling Dingbat, and they probably think that I'm calling the chief Dingbat. I worry about that, too. The subject of handicapped people has been of great concern to me since I was very young. I grew up in a Scandinavian community, and whenever you have a large number of Scandinavians, you have a lot of handicapped people. I have my share of handicaps. So I had to learn to not only live with mine, but put up with those of my associates. And also my folks, bless them, especially my mother. My father has gone a lot logging, but he was a very kind fellow. But My mother made sure that we were very kind to Erling, who wasn't like other boys, and he just lived down the road. He was 2 farms away, and it was up to me and a few others to defend, to take Erling's side, and I got into quite a few fights this way. But their parents and his sisters never forgot that. So this has been a concern of mine for a long time. I did work with the hearing handicapped some before the chief lost hers, but I really didn't understand the dimension of it until she lost her hearing. And I want to give you a couple of stories on this, because one of my concerns as a dean of a college of veterinary medicine was, to what extent can we admit handicapped people into the program, into professional schools? I was called to a conference on this one time. It was sponsored by the Head Shed in Washington, and there were some very interesting people there, including a blind professional and a person who was hearing handicapped from birth. The blind person had lost his eyesight at the age of 9, And he was being challenged, for example, by the dean of the pharmacy school, said, well, you know, there's no way a blind person could be a pharmacist. And this blind man says, what's your problem? He says, I started a chemical company, and I couldn't afford a chemist, and I had chemistry training, so I did the chemistry. But he told a very interesting story. He says, on my way out here, he'd flown in from Baltimore to the SeaTac airport. He was riding out on the plane. He was on the third seat over. There was a person in seat C. A is by the window, okay? And the stewardess came around to ask if they wanted some drinks. She asked the person sitting in the C seat on the aisle, would you like a drink? And so he gave it to her. And then the blind man was just two seats over. And what would you like to drink? And he told her that hearing wasn't one of his problems. But you see, it shows that here is a stewardess trained in one of the leading airlines that doesn't know how to handle a handicapped person. And that's true for the majority of the population, probably the majority of you here today. Because it was for me, and I had worked with them. At this same symposium, Chief's looking at her, so I got to hurry this up. She's looking at her watch already. But this was a person there who was hearing handicapped from birth, and he finally got into medical school at the age of 40. He probably qualified at 21. And I asked him, did he have any problems with his patients? And he says, no, I don't have any problems with the patients except the hearing handicapped. They don't think I'm for real. And it tells you something about their image, you see. And I think that's very important. Now, I came home from work, as I usually do, 5 minutes late, 6:35 on April the 14th, just before Easter.
1981.
And the chief was at the sink when I came in, and I said something to her, and she didn't respond because she usually came to attention when I came home. And so I went over towards to the sink, and I was there, but I fell asleep. And I said it again, and no response. And I went over to the sink, and I grabbed her hand, her arm like this, very gently. And she sort of went like that. And I said it to her, and she says, I can't hear you. I lost my hearing this afternoon. Well, that's a very devastating thing. And the first thing that came to my mind was a conversation we had over 30 years before. The chief and I were out, and I saw a blind man. And I told her, I says, boy, I couldn't stand to lose my eyesight. And she said, I couldn't stand to lose my hearing. Well, now, one of the things that came up on this was, a lot of things happened, and I'm going to have a few remarks at the end, and some of you will have some remarks, but I want the chief to have time for her story. But I want to tell you about some of the things that happened leading up to this that are very significant and why we ended up with this dog. But first I should say and make a point here that there were some very meaningful things that happened in this, and it should be a lesson to some of you. Within 24 hours of losing her hearing, Pastor Craig Shirley, who's associate with Pastor Quello in our church, showed up at the house. Because this is a loss that's devastating. And he recognized it. And when we went to church, and if you're going to lose your hearing, don't do it, if you like music, before Easter Sunday. Wait till after. We walked into church, And the chief, they were playing a beautiful organ prelude. And she says, "What's that noise?" And when the came time for the sermon, the first time Pastor Shirley gave a sermon, he came down and handed his sermon already typed out for her so she could follow along on the sermon. She probably got more out of the sermon than anybody else there. And he continues to do that. And that was the signal for me, of course, because this is, we need a re-education in this, and I'm still being re-educated on this. But Chief says, "Well, you know, we enjoyed summer theater at Pullman a great deal. We enjoyed it a very great deal." And Chief says, "Well, no use going to them anymore." And I says, "We are going to them. And we're going to sit right down front because it's very close to the stage. And we're going to check out the script." Because I took the signal, you see, from Craig Shirley, you see. And so we checked out the script. And she'd follow along in the script and got a lot out of it and enjoyed it. And this should be a lesson to us. Now, on the hearing dogs, I was very interested in hearing dogs. Back then, I knew about it, but in 1975 or 1976, in Minnesota, a lady had trained her dog to be a hearing dog, and it died. And she says, she called up a local TV station. She says, "My hearing dog died, and I want another hearing dog." And she says, "Well, what's a hearing dog?" It's what everybody thinks. You know, they laugh when you first tell them. And so they went to the local SPCA. And they said, "Well, we don't know what a hearing dog is." But they started a hearing dog program, but it was too big for them. So they got the American Humane Association to do it. And they started the program. And they placed over 100. They got out of it now, but because there's a lot of others, and if we have time, I'll tell you about some of these. But their first placement in the Northwest was for Mrs. Christensen on Gig Harbor. Her dog is named Ranger, and I was there on the follow-up, and the people on my right and left were with me when we went there. It was a very interesting day. We had exchanged pleasantries with her, and then and Leah Ray was with us. Well, that wasn't her first name, but
Laura
Ray. So Laura took her tape recorder for the smoke alarm, and Miss Christensen laid down on her bed, and then played the tape. And we were out in the living room, and she played the tape for the smoke alarm. And the dog jumped on top of her on the bed, which has a way of waking up. And when she got up, then the dog came running out and jumped on us to clear the house. You see? And then you remember, she fled and played the tape recorder for the phone. But it was a lousy recording. Huh? And dogs, they can tell C sharp from C flat, you see. And that dog looked kind of at that at the tape recorder, and then looked up at the phone, and you know, who's pulling my leg? And then, remember, we asked her, or Laura asked her, "Have you got any other problems?" "Well," she says, "it doesn't wake me up with the alarm." So we went and got the alarm clock, and the bell had fallen off, and it just buzzed, you see. And that doesn't work. You've got to have it the way it was trained, you see. So that sort of introduces you to hearing dogs. Except for two things that are very important. Remember, Chief, when we went, we were about to leave, she told you that when talking to a deaf person, you shouldn't exaggerate your lip movement.
I wasn't talking like that.
No, I know that. But she said that one should not accentuate. And then she said to me as we left, she said, "As important as it was for me to have a hearing dog, it was even more important that I have a companion." And that should tell you something very, very important. And now, it's the Chief's and Bridget's turn, and we'll have a little adjustment. We're going to do a demonstration too, but you're on, Chief.
When I lost my hearing, we said, what shall we do? And Leo said, well, we'll get a hearing dog after his experiences with Mrs. Christensen and so on. And I said, I don't want another dog. One is enough. A friend said she could take the dog and train it in 2 months or so. And I said, no, you can't take my dog. She was at this time about 3 years old, and she was at 3 and a half, and we had had her for a short time, and I had just gotten her to the point where she didn't hide under the table all the time. So Leah said, well, we'll train her to be a hearing dog. And we worked at it, but realized that we couldn't, that we needed help. Fortunately, the dog trainer in Pullman was a friend and a very capable person who said she would like to try to train Bridget just for the experience of training a hearing dog, and that she would come to our home and do this. And she came 5 days a week for the most part for about a year, maybe 10 or 15 minutes a day. The training continues. It's like learning a foreign language. If you don't use it, you forget it. And so Bridget has to be constantly reminded. And she's trained to do 4 things. There are other things you can train them for. She alerts me to the doorbell, the telephone, the alarm clock, and the smoke alarm. In the case of the telephone and the doorbell, she comes and puts her paws on me and then leads me to the door or the telephone, as the case may be. We'll demonstrate the alarm clock, hopefully. The smoke alarm, she comes and alerts me and then leads me to an outside door, which is in the bedroom. And we train with treats. And if we ever settle down and stay in the same place long enough so she is back in her normal routine, the treats are diminished. But right now, the treats are very important because we've been in other situations.
You want to lay down now?
Yeah.
And I'll set this. For that purpose of the tape, we have set the alarm clock. Chief is laying down. The dog is alert that the... go and get Chief.
Well, come on. That's a good girl.
She... she ordinarily...
Oh, yeah. She, at home... She jumps up, leaps up on the bed, which she dearly loves to do.
We should say that things are usually pretty quiet in Pullman at night. It's a long night, and the dog is, when I get up, the dog is almost waiting for that, to make that 8-foot leap, really looking forward to it.
One of our problems in training her was that she's pretty smart. And, of course, that's necessary. In fact, before the training started, Terry tested her. She was in communication with the Hearing Ear Dog program in Massachusetts, and they sent out a test which they use. They get their dogs that they train as hearing ear dogs from the dog pound. And they test them for their capability of learning this regime. Bridget kind of, she kind of failed in one of the tests. She was afraid of the, to show you what kind of, what we had to put up with at first. She was afraid of a Kleenex on the end of a string. But Terry thought she could train her anyway, and as it turned out, she did. One of our problems was that she she would bark and come to me, and if she could get eye contact, she figured she'd given me the message. Where it's necessary that she comes and puts her paws on me, because if my hearing gets worse, you know, then and the eye contact doesn't tell me where to go and so on. So I have to make it a point. I'm often where I can actually hear the phone or the doorbell, depending on where I am in the house, of course. And I have to make it a point not to look at her until she does what she's supposed to do. Sometimes I'm doing like this, you know, waiting for her to come, and she's looking out the front window and barking. But we do make progress. And Terry was authorized to test her, and she passed her test, and she is now a certified hearing ear dog, as you can see by her yellow harness. And there's a little metal plate on it that says this. And she is, by law in Washington State, and well, the last count was 20 other states, she has the same privileges as a seeing eye dog. And I understand Idaho has now become a state that recognizes it. I was a little worried. We live right on 8 miles from Idaho, and you know, how are we going to get across Idaho into Montana? But no problem. One of the important things, you ask why we have the dog up here. It's important, the bond, the close bond between the hearing dog and the hearing impaired person. And so we make every effort to do that.
And you also have an ID. I think that's
I have a what?
Your
oh,
identity.
Yes, I have a card. I should have brought that with the picture of Bridget and I together, and now on the back of it, it gives what we're entitled to in case somebody questions us. And I understand there are problems sometimes. I'm told that sometimes the bus drivers in Seattle, some of them won't allow a seeing eye dog on the bus. And I thought everyone knew about them, so I'm sure they would question hearing dog, except Bridget is small, so I can carry her some. One thing I mentioned, that we've been traveling and it or in different environments. We spent a few months in Seattle, and there was no doorbell. We were in an apartment and had to knock on the door. Well, we had to retrain her to recognize the knock. And one thing she has learned, well, a problem probably. When the phone rings, it's usually for Leo. But, and in Seattle, she'd often go to him and tell him that the phone was ringing. And, or sometimes if he's there, she gets kind of sloppy about coming to me. But I am told that this is often the case, that the hearing dog realizes when there's a hearing person there, they can kind of relax. their job's not as essential. And if you do get a hearing ear dog, don't take it any place where there are squirrels and chipmunks.
We should say that this dog is not the dog we see in Pullman. The only thing on her mind, other than food,
here are
squirrels and chipmunks. I mean, and she sits in her room waiting to be let out so she can go and bark at those squirrels and chipmunks. It just drives the chief crazy. Drives me sort of crazy.
It's fun to watch her, but it's no fun on the other end of the leash. There's one thing at home. If the telephone or the doorbell or smoke alarm, whatever, should ring while she is eating, she gets very disturbed and looks around and just continues eating.
You should also say what happens when you're visiting other people's houses.
Oh, yes. When someone else's home, the telephone rings. She comes charging up to me. And, of course, I might not have a treat in my pocket, and I don't know where the phone is. And it's.
Or if somebody rings the doorbell.
The same thing. But it's important for me to reinforce this behavior, and friends are very helpful in that respect, usually. They're kind of amused by it. Well, if you have questions later, I'll answer them. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit on things that I have learned that are helpful for me and for other, I'm sure it would be true for other hearing handicapped people. Now, I lost my hearing suddenly, but for most people, it's a gradual thing that creeps up, and often they're not aware of the extent of their problem. Their family and friends might be. And some people feel there's a certain stigma. We have the old picture of the stupid old man with the big horn, you know, and so we hesitate to get a hearing aid, which is too bad, because your loss of hearing is you're losing your tie to other people. Your communication is cut off. We'll go into that later. But anyway, I took a course in lip reading. I don't know if you'd call it a course. I was tutored in lip reading. Fortunately, we live in a university town. We live in Pullman, and the university has a communications disorders lab. And graduate students who are assigned as tutors to people such as I. And so I went for a year, more or less. But I should say that I have great admiration for Mrs. Christensen or anyone who can lip read well. It is most difficult, but it is helpful. If you have your back to me and say something, I can't hear you. I have to see you to hear ordinarily. And in our speech, you don't realize how many sounds are made with similar mouth movements. For instance, there's ball, mall, paw. You know, could you understand that if you didn't hear? And then there's come, gum, so many similar sounds made in the back of your throat, or, you know, with little lip movement. But there are some that are very obvious, and it is helpful. I think probably a lot of you, I know I did. I did some lip reading unconsciously all my life. And if you have a problem, I strongly recommend it.
And can we also interject that I had to also go to that class once or twice And I think this is very important because I had to learn, they were teaching me how to deal with it.
One other thing too is they say only about 25% at max that you can lip read. And that's, you know, the best, and most people can't get that much. So when you think about it, a lot of people I think, oh, she lip reads really well, meaning she gets 90% or whatever. Well, when you start looking statistically that only about 25% can even be lip read, you know, it's not.
You have to do a lot of guessing. Sometimes you hear something, I mean, something is said, and you don't understand it right away, and then you think, oh, yes, that's what it meant. But one big problem is names. I have a great deal of trouble with names. You can't guess about a name. There's no context. And if I say, hey, you, just please understand that I didn't understand your name. Spelling is helpful sometimes, but you're also a little embarrassed to keep asking. I can understand, Beth, when you are speaking full face.
Without whiskers and mustache.
The whiskers are fine. It's the full bushy mustache. Anything that covers your mouth, or it could be, you know, your hand, or you could be looking down, and I can understand. Like when people are reading, it's hard for me to hear. And sometimes I can hear the sound, but I can't understand it. It's and maybe instead of just repeat, if I say, I'm sorry, could you repeat? If you could rephrase, it is more helpful. There are some words, some sounds that are harder to hear than others. In fact, I was told, it seems incredible, that S, you know, does not carry over the telephone. But a normal person doesn't know that. But anyway. And speaking clearly without exaggeration and not too fast, but, you know, you don't have to exaggerate the slowness, but if sometimes I have to ask people to slow down. And the shouting, even for the hard-of-hearing person, isn't a good idea because most of us have hearing aids. And the shout is, if the noise is too loud, it's distorted. We can't understand. If you're sitting with your back to the light, it's very difficult to see your mouth, and that's so important if I'm going to hear. For instance, when we go to a restaurant, well, there's another problem, which is background noise. I think all of you have noticed how noisy it is in the dining hall. I make very little effort to talk to anybody there because I can't hear above the din. It's even hard in the village center, or here, if a lot of people are talking, it's hard. But when we go to a restaurant, we ask for a table kind of on the edge, and then I try to sit so I can have my back to the light. And also at home, I have taken a leaf out of the table to make people sit a little closer. I've pulled the furniture out from the wall, not far enough, but helps a little bit. When with this background noise, I'm told that a baby has the same problem. All, like our hearing aids amplify all sounds. For a baby, all sounds are the same. It is only, but we learn, the baby learns to differentiate, to block out the background noise, to concentrate on what he wants to hear. But that is, I mean, a baby can learn it, but it's just awfully hard. I haven't learned it yet. Maybe some people say I can hear more than I could a couple of years ago. I don't know. And if you want to talk to me, you have sometimes you have to touch me to get my attention. Otherwise, I won't know that you're talking. We have an amplifier on our telephone at home, so I can carry on the conversation on the phone in most cases. But if it's a matter of details, or if it's someone who talks very fast, and some voices are harder to hear than others, then I have to turn it over to someone else.
Or who it was. You often don't get the name.
Yeah, the name. The name is, you know, who's calling, and they give the name. Well, I don't hear that. If I knew who it was, I have so much trouble with Ellen Gambat. Somehow that name just doesn't, I don't hear it. But then after she says, well, you know, Holden, then I say, oh, Ellen. And I haven't watched television or radio very much. I just cut that out. But I think there are some ways that it can be. I should just sit down and make myself do it. But it is very hard work listening at first. It's exhausting. It's easier now than it used to be. There is an organization. Oh, yeah. One thing, it's a temptation to withdraw. I don't want to go to that. I won't hear anyway. In a group, even when there's, say, there are three people, I'm a group of four. In the conversation, I'll look at one person and I understand them, and then somebody else over here answers them, and I don't know, you know, by the time I figure out who they're talking, who is talking, there's somebody else is talking, and it's like trying to follow a ping pong ball, but it's harder. And so
can I interject something here, because it's a lesson for them. What I try to do, and the chief will say I probably am not always successful, I try to keep her in the conversation when I'm there for at a dinner party, which we try to keep small. And I'll try to bring her to attention, or if it's too complicated, I tell her afterwards what happened. Just like here, I try to summarize some of the high points of what is said here. And I think that's very important. And you do things where you don't have to listen so much. Like we play ping pong. You don't have to talk much. It's ping pong or cribbage or tile rummy.
No. But it's a problem in a family. I've been very fortunate. Even before I got my hearing aids, Leo could make me hear. I mean, he has a good, strong voice. But it causes a strain on the family. You know, oh, we can't do that because she can't hear. Or let's go to this party. Oh, I don't, you know, it'll be so noisy I can't hear. And repeating, rephrasing, and so on gets tedious, it gets tiresome. it causes strained relationships, but I think if we each can try to understand, it will help. And try to be helpful. Some of these things I've mentioned which should be helpful. There's a when you lose your hearing, you have a fear of isolation. I mean, people are out there, you can't hear them. I want to find out about your kids, but maybe I can't hear what you say. I can't hear all of it. I get kind of the gist of it. They're in Pennsylvania, they're married and so on, but the details I don't get. And so you think, well, I won't ask. And in the village, if I seem to be, you know, ignoring you or passing the other way, it isn't because I wouldn't love to talk to you. And I can talk outside where it's quiet, you know, about so far apart. You're afraid of being alone, of isolation, and yet you rather, you want it. It's easier. It's easier to stay home. It's easier to be by yourself. You have to force yourself to go, but I have found that people are very helpful and very concerned. At church after the service, you know, the organ is playing and everybody's going out. I can't hear anything. I say good morning and they'll say something and I say, I'm sorry, I just can't hear you now. And they accept it. I belong to a group that gives book reports, book reviews, and I've enjoyed it very much. But, you know, why go if I can't hear? And there's some rooms I can get into a chair where I can hear, but some rooms, you know, with the chairs lined up all around the wall, there's no place to sit where I could hear. But I have forced myself to go.
And also Pink Lady, you mentioned about Pink Lady.
And I have found it rewarding. And I have been a Pink Lady at the hospital in Pullman. And our main job is to take juice orders and give them fresh water or whatever they want. And I thought, oh, I can't do that anymore. But they said, well, I think Leo had kind of talked to them, that they urged me to come anyway. And so I do, and if it's a patient that's very ill and can't make me hear, I just excuse me, and I send one of the other girls in. But often I say, I'm sorry, I can't hear. And they light, several times, they've just lit up, you know, say, well, I can't hear either. And it's been very reassuring for me.
And you got a pineapple apricot call that you...
Pardon me?
You remember you got a pineapple apricot. Somebody wanted a pineapple apricot.
Oh, yeah.
And you figured that now. I think, in a way.
Did I? I don't think I figured that out.
Why, when you came home, you told me you did.
Oh,
of course,
okay.
You weren't sure that's what they ordered.
Yeah, okay. Now, there is an organization it's called SHH. I was introduced to it in Seattle. It's SHHH, Self-Help for the Hearing Handicap. It's a national organization. They have a magazine, which is very interesting and helpful too. Are you familiar with it? I wish I had brought one, and I packed in a hurry. In fact, they're even having a national convention in Chicago this summer, and there were two women from the group in Seattle that were going. I thought, you know, how in the world would you have a room full of hearing impaired people? But it can be done. And I went to a meeting of their group in Seattle at which a man from Coeur d'Alene demonstrated some equipment.
We went to it.
Yes, Leo went. It's there were many couples there where one is handicapped and the other not. But he had a wire, a telecoil is what he called it, and it was a long one. It went around the room, and everyone in it that had a special... like my hearing aid, which is a like that, has three settings. It's whistling now because it's not in my ear. It's off, T, and microphone, and then I have the volume control. And then if you have the hearing aid with a T setting, you set it to T, and then I could hear everything. Everybody inside this wire could hear. I had to put it right up to my ear, but some are hear better than others. And then he demonstrated some other equipment. And we're in the process, and I've had been to some other demonstrations, we're in the process of making a purchase. I borrowed it and then used it at church and very successfully, but I was stupidly, I had to pick this up the day before we left. We were in town 2 days in between a trip to California and in coming up here, and I picked this up. This is on, I have it on trial, and I had some special ear molds made, and I think they're someplace at home. I hope so, because we sent for them and they sent the container here, but they weren't in it. So, but anyway, I thought I would show you what they have. And this is used a lot in schools. You use it in your classroom, Carol. And I don't know the language.
Maybe you want to use this to talk about next week, would you, Carol? Yeah.
Well, anyway, what kind of radio? FM radio. And there's a belt clip, or you can have it on a harness for kids. And then, and clip into these ear molds that I don't have.
And they're somewhere in Pullman.
Yeah. And then, so this is not very helpful up here.
We were so looking forward to it because she would have been in on all the presentations, you see.
And this is what the...
speaker.
This is the speaker that you give to whoever is doing the talking, and there's a clip. They can clip it someplace on their clothes and then clip it, you know, to there. And then I can sit over in the back corner and hear. There's a volume control and so on. I've used it at church very successfully. It's and some churches are putting in such a system. There are, I can't remember, maybe 10 radio frequencies assigned to these. This is set for channel 32, but there you can get a clip that, I mean, you can...
Crystal.
Yeah, you get a crystal that will... For another channel, for instance, it would be nice if In Pullman, they are installing a system eventually in all of the auditoriums. They're starting out in the big Coliseum. I went there for a testing. I'm a good guinea pig because if I can hear, you know, it's pretty good. And then the other auditoriums will eventually have them. And some of the churches have them too. And it would be nice if they'd all be on the same frequency so you know, your outfit would work.
What we're making a plea for is that when you go to your churches, I mean, get a good system, but try to cooperate with the other ones so you're accommodating them. And also in your organizations to have these put in and put in good ones so that she could then, people with this, they could go in, they don't have to take all the apparatus, just one thing, and they just tune in on them. It sure make a lot easier. And that's one of the things we like about SHH organization. They're working very actively to put pressure, for example, on the telephone companies to all gear up so that she can hear and work on these kind of systems. You had a comment.
Is the FM system better than the loop system?
For me, it is.
For you, it is.
I don't know. This is the loop, and it has to be fastened in here too, and that's all you need. And the first time I tried it, it worked wonderfully. Leo could be all over the kitchen and I could hear him. And I thought, you know, this is the, now we're going to put, I'll use that. And we have company and I can hear the whole thing. I tried it the next night and I've tried it numerous times since then and it's nothing. I don't know what.
Maybe something broke.
Yeah, I think there's something wrong because it should work that one time and it should work. I think we're going to investigate further because we're just into this.
But this is a different one.
I know it is. I know.
And I had my hearing aid, I sent that in to have it
work. Turn it to the T-switch?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And but anyway.
The disadvantage of FM is that everybody's got to buy a unit and ear molds for the unit,
yeah.
Whereby their T-switch is on there anyway.
Yeah.
I think we'll see you afterwards, and maybe we can make this thing work this next week, you see.
Yeah.
We'll get to work.
Yeah.
I think our time is up. Thank you very much.
Well, I think we still got a little time, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
All right, yes.
I had a comment about the TV, because I think people should know about the closed captioning units that can be purchased now.
Very good.
A lot of people who are hard of hearing would benefit from these the same as the deaf, but they don't know about them. Where the company, the TV channels are putting on more and more captions with the television shows. You've probably seen it listed in the TV guide. And if you buy the decoder, then you can see the words and your family doesn't have to have the television turned up so loud that they can't stand it.
The other thing I wanted to say is that I often get the question, as I've already have on, Where can you get a hearing dog and how much do they cost and how do they do it? Well, we don't have time to go into a lot of that, but the closest one to you here, they've trained a few at Spokane with the Humane Society there. There is at La Conner, there's a lady named Kathleen Wally and James Genovese who contacted the chief and I when they heard about us, because the chief and Bridget have been on television and they're stars of television, screen, and radio, and newspapers. And so they, a lot of people found out about it, and they came to see us, and they've set up a program of all, they call it the Skagit Bay Hearing Dog Center. And so it has a very interesting address. It's 1860 Pull and Be Damned Road. And that's for real. That's for real. At La Conner. But they seem to be going at it right. And I look forward to some very good dogs out of there. Also at Applegate Center in Jacksonville, Oregon, it looks like they got a good system. At San Francisco, at the SPCA, they seem to be doing a very good job and a good follow-up. It's very important on follow-up. And there are...
Minneapolis? Isn't there one back there?
I don't know of one now, but you can write to the Delta Society. I have some folders here. We are putting all that on the computer, so we'll know all the centers. I'm more familiar. One of the best ones is in England. 3 years ago, I got a couple of people that are really tigers going on it, and they really got an outstanding program now in London, and also in Australia. I was also 3 years ago, and again this last summer. And what they do there, they use the dogs that flunk out of the best ones that flunk out of the hearing ear program. Guide dog program, and they train them for hearing dogs. But they're usually big dogs. For hearing dogs, you can go to smaller animals like this. So you can, it's much easier, carry them around. You can, I think it's really better. And yeah, you can put them in your pocket. And they don't knock you down when they jump on you, or flatten you when they jump on your bed. And
or your husband.
That's right. Yeah. Now, I had a very interesting question put to me at the International Symposium in Vienna here a few months ago. The Handy Dog Programmers, it's a group in Santa Rosa. They train dogs to help handicapped people. And they asked me if they could train a cat to be a hearing cat. Well, I think if you select your cat properly, you can probably train a cat to be a hearing cat. And that will help out some people who like cats and all. Because I know of two cases, kind of interesting. There's one lady told me at a symposium in Canada that her four cats always beat her to the phone when it rang. And another one had a dog and a cat. And the dog always answered the door. But then the dog lost its hearing. But the cat picked up on this and was a hearing cat for the dog. And it would notify the dog that somebody was at the door, so the dog could bark and welcome him. So I figured this was going to work. So I'm very anxious to hear about this. Yes, Jean.
Signe, do you have any difficulty getting a driver's license?
No.
That's an interesting question having to do, how about hearing handicapped people driving?
They didn't check my hearing.
But it turns out that if you read the statistics, and you have, the hearing handicapped have lower accident rate than other people. Now, one of my concerns here is on the sirens. The chief is hearing, she hears sirens and emergency vehicles now. But for some people, like Mrs. Christensen, I had told her to train her dog for that, and she's now lost her hearing completely. Well, when I was at the prison the other day, on a show and tell where we're working with the prisoners, and she was there. I told you about that, did I? There she was with her dog. And at my age, you don't look at the people there, you look at the dogs, you see. And I, boy, I knew that dog. And I couldn't remember it, where I'd seen it. And suddenly Mrs. Christensen said, "You were at my house 3 or 4 years ago," you know. It was a follow-up. But she had made the point here that it's very important that we all need continuing education, including the dog. And this dog, of course, was trained starting, it was almost 5 years old when we started training it, right? So it's six, you know, you can teach an old dog new tricks. But in her case, she had had an accident, lost her hearing completely, and she was shouting at the dog, you see, and scaring it, and other bad habits had picked up. So So she was there for remedial training.
One thing about the driving. I think hearing impaired, I know because I've seen the statistics too, hearing impaired people have good driving records. I worry about the people like me who know some deaf people who turn to talk to them while they're signing, and I'm, you know, kind of driving and trying to carry on a conversation. So don't worry about the deaf out there. Worry about the hearing person that's driving with the deaf person.
Or the hard of hearing person who does lip reading. She's got a turn.
Yeah, the same thing.
All right, that's school's out.